tonight cloudy and 65. Friday, partly sunny and 79. Right now, humidity 94%. Cloudy sky, 72 degrees. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg, next.
Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgift.com. Support for the morning show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTDHD. I'm Gregory Berg. It's a cloudy, soggy day, but it's a cheerful day whenever Tim Mahone is around. Tim Mahone, of course, is here on the morning show today to kick off a program that's going to include three different interviews. This opening chat with Tim, and then conversations with two of the participants in this Saturday's Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival, which is a major fundraiser for the Mary Lou Arthur F. Mahone Fund. And so we'll be talking a little bit later with the lead singer of the reggae group Natty Nation, and we'll also be talking with one of the best caterers here in Kenosha, Chef David, who's going to be participating in the cooking aspect of Saturday's event. But to kick things off with kind of the overarching overview is Tim Mahone himself. Tim, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Very good morning to you and your wonderful listeners. Good morning.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
I know that one of the reasons you enjoy coming on the morning show to promote what's happening at the big music festival is because it gives you a chance to talk about two people, Mary Lou Mahone and Arthur F. Mahone, your parents. For the sake of somebody new to the area or new to the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival, explain who they were and how this festival honors their memory.
Well, I think every son is going to talk favorably about their parents. This is my turn to do so. My mother and father, particularly my mother in the forefront, my father in the background as he's raising nine children, were very, very active in promoting humanity and uplifting the joy in the life of an individual and ensuring that access to affordable quality education and access to affordable high quality health care, particularly in the women's case, was essential to the positive journey of one's life and succeeding in one's life. And so my mother worked really, really hard to coordinate that social service activity around poverty, social justice, homelessness, to ensure that Kenosha fabric brought people together, regardless of race and religion and gender. And I often know those words are kind of tossed around these days lightly. But if you knew my mother, and she walked the streets and talked to parents and she talked to children back when it was okay to do that without any fear of what the outcome was, because she knew she gave nothing but love for people. And so what we try to do, we could never fill the shoes of my mother, but she had the beautiful heart and joy and spirit and God in her movement. And so this event helps perpetuate my mom and dad's legacy in a way that allows students, the proceeds from this event provide scholarships to students to go to college. And any time that we can invest in our next generation and close the intergenerational gap with our students and our seniors and our middle-aged folks, there's just no question society is better. This particular community is better because we have to learn from each other as generations evolve. And that's what my mother was very active as well, and my father. My mother worked with seniors, and she worked with the youth, and she worked with people to make sure we're always talking about the consciousness of humanity and challenging us to do better and challenging us to improve the human condition because it was our obligation to do so. So, you know, in a very small way, in our family, we grew up around quality music and quality food. And when she passed, we were trying to figure out the best way to bring people together. And music does that, and quality food does that, and some good drinks as well. and, of course, in this case, we have a great location in Kenosha on our lakefront. So 13 years ago, as you know, we kicked it off with Ramsey Lewis, and 13 years later, we couldn't be more happy about providing, you know, in our little old town here, Kenosha, nestled between Milwaukee and Chicago, some very high-quality music year in and year out. And I thank you for the opportunity and your listeners every year for supporting us.
You bet. I think you always make the case very eloquently of who you bring to this event and the fact that it's not just somebody who really plays good jazz, that that's not enough, but that you are always bringing people into this event who, one way or another, you know, are going to fold into this event beautifully and sort of the spirit of what it's all about.
We've worked hard over the years to, one thing we know, let me back up one second. One thing we know is you don't have to leave Kenosha to hear quality music. We wanted to ensure that in order to attract the right fan, the music aficionado, that we had to have high quality music from the very beginning to the end, which is why we always worked with our KUSD Jazz All-Stars with Ken Wheely. He helped us get started with the youth group over at Lincoln Middle School. And so we always wanted to have a national artist come in where people could recognize the music and pay a good community-friendly price and enjoy themselves while at the same time supporting a great cause. And so, as you know, we all leave Kenosha and go to Milwaukee, Chicago for some high-quality music. And we said, well, why not Kenosha? Especially since we're so close to everybody. It's easy to get to, and over time, the word has gotten out amongst the agents that you can come to Kenosha, and the Mahone Fund, the Harbor Park Jazz and Blues Festival, has great fans, and they enjoy great music. So they enjoy coming to Kenosha. We take good care of them. They eat at some of the fine restaurants here. We all work it out, and they hang out a little bit after our events to meet and greet with the fans. So that word's gotten out. You know, early on, you have to build that reputation, right, as a quality event. And I think we've done that because we have a committee of 14 people that work really hard and are dedicated to studying the musician and the background and the fan reaction and where they travel, because obviously that helps on the cost.
Sure, absolutely. So you have a great lineup this year again, and we won't talk too much about the reggae of Natty Nation, although I'll give you a minute to say a little something, but we're going to hear from their lead singer later in the hour. The CNJ Latin Jazz Quintet is part of this, Terry James and the Blue Flames. Your headliner, who plays at 7:30 in the evening, is a really big name, Yuge Groove, and it sounds like you were really, in a sense, kind of lucky to get him because he's on a major national tour that's taken him to really, really big cities. But on that itinerary, little old Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Little old Kenosha, Wisconsin. Like I said, we made a name for ourselves amongst those agents who promote the jazz artists. But we've been trying to get Yuge for 3 years. See, this guy's been busy. He's very active, and he's a desired national act. And so that agent knew that we wanted him here in Kenosha. And this year we finally got the call saying, hey, right now this date's available. We had him booked in January. So it's, and we usually try to do that so we can spend more time marketing, getting the word out. But he's coming in from California with that saxophone, and he's gonna knock the waves out of sight here. So it's gonna be a lot of fun. And of course, you said Natty Nation. I won't say anything, but Yemen. So it's important to diversify the music, right? And in this case, we're able to bring in a Caribbean Jamaican style reggae music, and we're really excited about that. The response has been very good about having some reggae music, so we were able to book this group out of Madison, very talented at the state level. So very, very happy to kick this off with reggae. And you know what? The message of the music about, again, about humanity is an interesting way to kick it off, and they're very excited about bringing their high-energy quality music about people. So it's fitting in that way also.
Absolutely. And, of course, I have to think that given some of the disturbing events that we all watched with such horror this past weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia, and kind of a new national conversation, or it's not a new conversation, but a conversation that, in a sense, has been taken to a new level, I should think that you see an event like this as being, in a sense, even more important for what it represents and what it says to all of us.
You know, we... we're being tested right now. You know, the moral fabric of each and every individual in this country is being challenged about what they stand for. And any individual who stood for and supported hatred and bigotry and racism and intolerance should not come to this event.
You're not going to find a home.
You're not going to find a home. This place will be full of love. This place will be full of different races, different people, different genders, and we're going to have a blast, and we will do everything we can to eradicate hatred and racism. Mm. There's no place for it in our hearts.
Right. There's a place for good food, as you said, in this festival, not just the concessions, but also the chef demonstrations, because your mom was an amazing cook. Mary Radigan, who we had on the show yesterday, went out of her way to mention that, actually. And how this event honors her legacy. So Mary Radigan and Chef David, who we'll be talking to a little later in this hour, are going to be part of the event that kicks everything off at 1:15. Just say a real quick word about the way the cooking demonstration is going to be kind of laid out this year in a way that's different and really exciting.
We're so excited about it because we partnered with Kitchen Cubes this year to actually build out a kitchen. So we have a mock display kitchen environment that allows Mary Radigan and Chef David to feel like they're in their own kitchen, and that the food aficionado that's listening to both of them about the Epicurean cuisine, New Orleans cuisine, will feel like they're at home as well. So it's going to be a kitchen environment. It's going to be an interactive demonstration around some pork belly skewers. Again, like you said, not to get into it because they're going to talk in depth about it. But what better way to complement quality music than have people come in and learn about something that they probably have never cooked before? And you got two high quality chefs with great brand names here with high quality cooking styles. And, you know, they decided to come and share that with us, and we're very happy about that. Anytime you can come and put your name on the line and share it with others and grow and help us build a festival that brings about good quality change and raise money for kids, we're very excited about that. And the two items that they're sharing with us, very tasty. I haven't had a chance to taste it. I'm waiting to taste it that day. But my sister artist and Terry Jacobson co-chair that. And remember, we started 3 years ago with this. And
right.
It's taken off. And we started by learning how to cook a pig, roast a pig. A little controversial, but it was very exciting. And you don't really realize what you're getting till you sit and listen to the experts. For those who, like myself, who don't cook, my sister cooks very well, and all of us go to festivals where you see a little bit of a cooking demonstration here and a cooking demonstration here. And the light went off about 5 years ago, and we said, boy, why don't we bring that here? Because we saw what it did to a festival in terms of adding another value add, music, quality food. So what better way to complement that, especially with our own?
Absolutely.
And I think they're very excited about it. And Kitchen Cubes, I couldn't thank enough for them saying, hey, let's build out a kitchen and make this look like a real kitchen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just don't call me up there because
right.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
No, that's a great idea. And Mary was saying, Mary Radigan yesterday was saying how excited she was and how she thinks it's going to really pull this part of the festival into the audience and or draw the audience in a very exciting way.
That's right.
The event also includes a big silent auction with a big getaway to Chicago is one of the big grand prizes. And there's going to be a wine pull. Explain to our listeners what that term means, a wine pull.
We're looking for different ways to raise funds. And you know, a good quality red and white wine goes with a good event. And so it's a raffle where you get to buy a couple chances and you select anonymously a number. and that number is associated with a particular bottle of wine, and you won't know until you pick the bottle what that
is.
So last year we sold 100 bottles, so we upped it to 150 this year. So we have 150 high-quality bottles of wine that you can get at the festival. But this is our second year doing that, and it was extremely popular. So I think they should come and enjoy themselves. It's a no-carrying event, so that also assists in allowing people to buy and support the cause at the same time.
Of course.
Which is good.
And so people can just show up at the gate and buy a ticket, or is it better to buy a ticket ahead of time?
It's better to buy the VIP ticket in advance. We're close to selling the VIP ticket out. We don't like to turn people away, but the VIP ticket is something that's hot and sponsored by Texas Roadhouse, so we get a chance to have some fall-off-the-bone ribs and some other good items, but certainly can walk up to the gate. Now, if you walk up to the gate, it's a little bit more expensive. It's $35 if you walk up the day of. It's $25 in advance at Tenuta's Deli, famous deli here, Andrea's, as you said, Jack's Cafe, and, of course, the Kenosha Community Foundation.
Right. And so tickets are on sale on all of those locations.
All of those locations. And the website.
Yeah, and when you get in the door, I mean, the cooking starts at 1:15, and the music goes well into the night.
Well into the night.
So you are getting a lot for your money besides supporting the Mary Lou and Arthur F. Mahone Fund.
Yeah.
And mahonefund.org is the address for your website. Well, we hope a lot of people are going to be seeking out all of the fun and joy and energy that is always part of this event. And Tim Mahone, I'm really grateful to you for joining me for part one of today's morning show. This has been great, as always.
I appreciate the opportunity. I just want to say thank you to all of our volunteers.
Oh, yeah, you have a lot of them.
We have a lot of volunteers.
Wouldn't have much of a festival without
them. Volunteers.
All right.
Thank you.
You betcha. Here's part two of today's morning show here on WGTD.
Reincarnation, starting it over again. If you don't finish what you started, then you have to be born again. Reincarnation, the cycle will never end. If you don't finish what you started, then you have to be born again.
It is time once again for the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival coming to Kenosha this Saturday, August 19th. And one very exciting addition to the musical offerings will be the unmistakable flavor of reggae. And bringing that fresh take to the Harbor Park event this weekend is a group actually based in Madison called Natty Nation. And Natty Nation has actually been around for a long, long time, founded back in 1995. And if I'm not mistaken, Ja Boogie has been with Natty Nation for the whole long, exciting ride. And so he's going to be on the stage of the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival this weekend. And I am excited now to connect with him and find out a little bit more about this this wonderful, energetic, positive music, and how he became involved in the creation of Natty Nation. Ja Boogie, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really happy to have you, and it's especially exciting to talk to somebody who was there at the creation of Natty Nation. Am I right? You're one of the founding members, and I think the only
Correct.
Founding member still with the group.
Correct. Yep.
Before we talk about how Natty Nation got formed, tell us a little bit about where you are from originally. I mean, is Madison where you were born and raised, or do you come from someplace else? And tell us a little bit also about your earlier musical journey ahead of Natty Nation.
Well, I was born and raised in Racine, Wisconsin.
I didn't know that. Tell us more.
Yep. I was went to our Case High School. And was forming bands back in the day, from jazz band and symphonic band and things like that. We had a group called Fruit Salad that was a mixture of rock, funk, and then we added in some reggae along the line as well. So we had kind of a little jazz was in there too. And it was a three-piece band, guitar, bass, and drums. I was on bass and vocals, as I still am today. And from that, we started to branch into more, you know, reggae styles as the years went on.
What was your introduction to the music of reggae? Any person in particular? And at what point in your life did you kind of make your initial acquaintance with reggae?
I believe I used to go to Summerfest a lot as a child, as a youth. As a youth, too, I was in a band called the Smooth Players when I was like about 8 or 9. They discovered me at a school talent show. I was doing Michael Jackson impersonation, and I could actually sing, you know. So they were like, hey, you should be doing this with a band. So from that, I was able to play Summerfest at a young age. And with playing Summerfest, I was able to witness some reggae live. And that's where I discovered it around the age of 9 or 10.
Wow. So this has been a part of your life for a long, long time. By the way, in your days at Case, was music what kind of swallowed up your whole life? I mean, is that you sort of lived and breathed it every minute of every day?
Yeah, I was playing on pots and pans at an early age before I could even talk. So they decided to get me a drum set at the age around 5. So I was in talent shows playing drums for a long time. So that's the first thing I was known for in the area, was the little drummer boy, you know. So I was playing drums for a while, and I picked up bass later on. But I was given instruments as a child, so I was nurtured through the family, my grandmother and things, buying me instruments. So I was surrounded by instruments thanks to my grandmother.
Fantastic. So was it college that took you to Madison?
Yeah, technical school. Yeah, brought me up here and met some people that were of like minds, were interested in reggae and the culture, and started forming bands from there. We were in a band called Arawak Jah before Natty Nation was formed, and then some of the members from that band created Natty Nation together. Myself, Steve Cato, he was originally from England, and Peter Johnston from Eau Claire, I believe.
One of the things that I remember reading early on is that I believe all of you were Americans. Is that right? All the original members of Natty Nation?
Except for Steve Cato, who's English.
Oh, okay. But none of you was Jamaican.
None of us are Jamaican.
Right. And one of the things I heard one of you say in an interview was that you were not going to pretend to be Jamaican, that you wanted to serve up reggae as Americans. So what did that mean? In what way was and does your reggae remain American versus Jamaican? Is it just about the way the words are inflected, or is there anything more about it?
That's a good question. I would say that it was the rock influence. We're grown up in an R&B and rock environment. So we're pretty much a rock band that plays reggae. And a side note is we did have a Jamaican in the band later on. As soon as the band formed, we did have a Jamaican in the band. And through him, we learned a lot about the culture, Rastafarian culture, and the culture of Jamaica, and all the patois and the way they talk and the way that they, you know, the way that they do things. So that helped us a lot into forming, to getting into the culture of this music. But yeah, we basically are a rock band, rock influence, and we decided to play reggae. And we do it our way, you know, it's that rock flavor is there. The you know, even a hip-hop flavor is there. As you can hear on Reincarnation, it's kind of got a little hip-hop flavor to it.
Right. One of the things I need you to explain to me, maybe some of our listeners would understand this, but when I was reading up about your primary musical influences, one article says Natty Nation is primarily influenced by reggae and dub, D-U-B. I don't know what that term means in this context. What does dub mean?
Dub is kind of the the music that backs up the reggae in without the vocals, and then add an end type of delays and different effects. It's kind of the dub vibe. It's back in the day, they in Jamaica, they would do shows with just a DJ playing a certain record, and they would play the instrumental, and someone would be on top of it, similar to hip-hop. This was before hip-hop was formed. This is where hip-hop comes from, where they would have dances, parties, and things with the just a DJ playing the dub version, which is kind of the, I would say, would be the instrumental version, and then there would be a singer or somebody chanting on top of that. So we incorporate the dub into our live performance by, you know, we stop singing and we just start playing the rhythm is what we call it, or the track.
Right.
And adding in little delays, little effects, and things like that. That's my interpretation of dub.
Right. You are, I understand, the person who writes almost all of the lyrics that get sung in your pieces. Are you also the primary composer of the music?
For the most part, myself now and Aaron Conkle do a lot of the composing, and I do, I'd say, all of the lyrics now. Back in the day when we had the Jamaican, his called J. Max, Jeffrey Maxwell, we used to take turns on the lead vocals, and he would bring a lot of his songs in, which we do a few of his songs still to keep his memory alive. He passed away in 2001. So we keep his memory alive by continuing to play some of his songs as well.
Right. It's probably important for people to know that many of your songs, probably most of your songs, tackle serious issues, I mean, and have a real message. Tell us the kind of issues that you like to engage with in your lyrics.
Well, I don't know if you heard the new album. The new album's called Divine Spark.
A little bit of it, not very much yet.
Yes. Well, we've always tackled issues of, like, racial strife and, you know, trying to bring more love to the world because we live in a world that has a lot of war, has a lot of strife and conflict. So we address those things in the music. On the reincarnation We address that on the new album, Divine Spark. We are going a little bit more into metaphysics, spirituality, dealing with, I'd say, more of an Eastern take of spirituality, talking about chakras, energy centers within the body, different scriptures, and things of that nature as well. So a little bit of everything is going on here. But spiritual matters, social matters. So, yeah, some serious things.
And would you say that that's something that is sort of a hallmark of Natty Nation specifically? Or is this something we hear a lot from the world of reggae?
I say you hear a lot of the world of reggae because it's based on a Rastafarian belief system, which is, I would call it somewhat Christian-based, not all the way. But they have some of the same belief systems, and it comes from an African state of mind where they talk about African issues and the issues of being in the Caribbean and being African. So you will hear that a lot. I think that's a main theme in reggae for the most part, is the liberation of the African people and where it all started.
You know? So tell us what keeps you going with Natty Nation after all of these years. It's a long time to be part of the same group. And, of course, as we've already touched on, all of the other founding members of Natty Nation are on to other adventures of one kind or another. What keeps you so excited about Natty Nation after all of these years?
Well, I'm pretty passionate about what I sing about. And I think that reggae in particular is a really good way to get this message out. It has a certain beat. It has a certain vibe that it soothes you, so that you can actually take in the message. So my vibration is to stay with a reggae type of music, you know. So it's always been something that keeps me centered. So, I just have an affinity for it. So that's why I stick with it. And I put a lot of my life into this particular band. So it's not something that I want to just stop doing.
Mm-hmm. Are you excited about coming to Kenosha and bringing reggae for the first time to the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival?
Yeah, I just found that out, that we were the first reggae to be part of this. And it's always great. It's always, you know, because we're from Wisconsin, where reggae is not, you know, a predominant music. It's the music of the Caribbean. But we you know, whenever we can bring that music, it's like so important to us, you know, because a lot of times you won't even get to see the Jamaican acts that do this music. So it's good for someone to represent. You know, so that's very special to us.
Absolutely.
Be part of that. So.
Well, Natty Nation will bring the fresh sound of reggae to the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival this Saturday. And as a matter of fact, they will take the stage at 2:45 Saturday afternoon. So it's going to be an exciting, wonderful moment for this event that so many people are looking forward to. And Ja Boogie, one of the founding members of Natty Nation, I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to join me for this conversation on the morning show. And very best wishes to you, and I look forward to hearing Natty Nation in person this Saturday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. Appreciate you.
Natty Nation, it's 8:42 and you're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. Here's part three of today's program. And I'm excited to be spending this portion of today's morning show with someone known affectionately as Chef David, known affectionately and professionally as Chef David, David Perez of Chef David's Catered Events. And lots of people here in southeastern Wisconsin are well aware of the wonderful work that Chef David does for various events all over the place. He was just saying as he stepped into our studios that he does all kinds of things right here on the Gateway Technical College campus and all kinds of events all across the city. And he's going to be one of the chefs featured in this weekend's Harborside Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival down at the lakefront. Chef David is going to be helping to kick off the Harbor Park Jazz series this Saturday afternoon at 1:15, doing a presentation that's going to involve something straight out of the cuisine of New Orleans. We have Chef David in our studios to talk about what he's going to do and also talk about the wacky, wild, and wonderful world of catering and some of the adventures and probably misadventures that are part of that kind of work. Chef David Perez, we welcome you to the morning show.
Well, good morning.
Glad you can be here. Thanks for being part of the morning show. Could we find out, first of all, where your interest in cooking began? Are you one of these chefs who was already wearing the chef's hat at their mom's knee at the age of three, or is your story a little different than that?
No, it's exactly like that. We are incorporated. It wasn't forced upon me, but it was more as part of our chores, because we ran, my mother ran family businesses, and it involved cooking and preparations of foods.
And at what point did you decide that you wanted to really pursue this professionally? I mean, that you thought this was going to be, in a sense, your vocation, your professional calling in life.
Yeah, my livelihood now. But but it really started because I lost my job. I was a machinist for 25 years over at Tri-Clover here in Kenosha for manufacturing. But I've always had a passion, and that passion always carried me through because I've done it all through my childhood and even through my teenage years before I went to trade school for machining.
Right. So when this job reversal occurred, I mean, a lot of people can relate to that. That's when you decided, well, maybe I should take this other passion in my life and turn it into a calling. So did you try to create a catering business then and there? Or did you,
yes, I did. That's how it actually really started. Actually, my wife suggested it. She says, you always love cooking. You've always done it your whole life. Why don't you create, you know, a job, a business of it? And at the time, well, she still does work at Abbott Laboratories, and she worked with a lot of pharmaceutical reps. So my business started making lunches and breakfasts for pharmaceutical reps.
Ah, and the rest is history, because Now it seems like you're making meals for everybody and everything. One of the things that intrigues me, it's one of the reasons I was really excited to talk with you, is because there is so much more to the business than just cooking the food. It just seems like logistically it's like one step away from a nightmare to kind of make it all work just from a logistics point of view. Can you just talk about those kind of challenges, including probably challenges that most of the rest of us don't even stop to think about?
Yes, this is true. There is a lot of logistic problems, issues that arise. But, you know, being organized is a major key of it. And timing is another logistic, I would say, area that we always are cognizant of. But this is where my old job comes to really play and comes into focus. Those skills, the math skills, time skills, setup skills, a lot of those skills that I learned as a machinist really carried over for me in my business aspect today. I still use a lot of, you know, measurements, weight measures, portion control. All those things are coming to play, and it's no different than measuring micrometers. So all those were crossed. It was crossed over. Mm-hmm. Now is documentation of preparing for lots of people at one time, and those processes is where my skills in machining come into place. Mm-hmm. Developing a process for making large quantities, where a restaurant is different. There's different kinds of cooks. There's breakfast cooks, there's line cooks, and then there's, you know, banquet or facility cooks. You know, that's what we fall under, where we're making foods for large amounts. You know, your cafeterias, your big institutionals like universities, colleges, they do large quantities. Abbott Labs has, you know, they do large quantity. And it takes a different requirement than line cooking with somebody order a menu. We have a certain menu where we cook every day, and we, you know, you have things prepped and where they just cook it as a line and get it out the door.
Right. Does it make a difference in terms of, for instance, what you offer or what you actually cook, that you're making large quantities of it? I mean, that are there certain things that just don't work if you're cooking it for 100 or 1,000,
yes,
versus what you're just going to cook for your wife to eat or for this customer to eat? What kind of difference does that make in terms of the kinds of things you make?
There's a huge difference. Every venue that we work out of has different amenities. And with those amenities, some, you know, like the Kemper Center here in Kenosha, they have a full kitchen. And they have all the chinaware, everything that you really would need. You can actually cook and prepare everything that you want there. Other venues that we work out of, like our barn venues, we're lucky we have a sink and a room. So that brings a challenge. So things that, and then it limits us as far as you know, what menu choices and things that we compare, you know, that we can prepare on site. We, you know, if we do grilling is one thing that we could do on site. I like to have my food as fresh as possible, so we always are cognizant of that effect. Or we change a menu to fit, you know, the venue that we have, that all still, you know, meet the taste and needs of our clients.
Right. So part of the issue then is, in some cases, you have to cook food and then you have to transport it.
Exactly.
And so it has to be something in which it's going to stay good and not turn into a coagulated mess on the other end.
Exactly. We have transports, heating transports that we carry our food in to keep things hot and to keep things cool. You know, everything's got to be, regulated, safe temperatures. And that's what another thing with catering is that there's a lot of loading, unloading, loading, unloading, and then we unload again to clean up. And, that's where a lot of the physical work is in that aspect. And like I say, timing is another. What are things that could hold the longest and still maintain the quality that we're looking for? And then the last things that need to be cooked at the very last moment before we go to our, scheduled events.
Right. When it comes to something really basic, let's just say, for instance, I'm pretty sure on your list of things is something like mostaccioli or something.
Pasta, we like to call it pasta.
Right. But, I'm just curious. I mean, do you have kind of your own sort of magic formula in terms of exactly how that gets seasoned and so on? Or does it not make sense to even kind of think in those sorts of terms when we're talking about such large quantities that have
We do. We make everything from scratch. A lot of your, canned products and lots of, I really am conscious of the sodium levels, sugar levels of any product that we use. All our meats and produce we use only fresh. We don't really use any frozen. Canned is probably we're looking at tomatoes. I use Marzano tomatoes probably the most, and that's what we use for our sauces. And otherwise, everything else is, comes from cows and other sorts of animals.
Right.
But everything we do is made from scratch, or we send it out to, let's say, our rolls. We use local bakeries here in town that we use to help with some of our large events.
Right. So you're not just dumping a can of pasta sauce into a big vat. You are creating your own, in a sense.
Yes, we do. We do.
Very good. And I should think that after a while, one of the things that becomes so important in your business is the interaction with people and the fact that, you're not just interacting with your ingredients and creating this food in a vacuum, but there are customers on the other end, including whoever has hired you. And I know from talking to several different people that's a strength that really matters in this business, being able to interact with people, to understand what they need, and to do the best that you can to give them exactly what they want.
This is true. And people who know me will say I'm a very outgoing person, spoken person, and that really helps in this business because you have to ask a lot of questions to clients. Sometimes, clients are corporate where, this is what we're going to have, this is what we're going to do, and that relationship is developed that way because it's repetitive. Then we have new relationships where we're dealing with first-timers, and first-timers, I call, are like our wedding people, and they really don't have a really concise menus in mind, and so we just kind of educate them through the process. And if we can just make them more educated in their decision making, because doing a wedding or wedding reception of that sort, it's a very costly endeavor, and I know that. I have a daughter that got married, and I know what it costs. And I do a lot of these every weekend. I do know what it costs, and it's the cost can go up exponentially, in just a snap of a finger. So I like them to be informed, so know where they're going to spend their money, how it's going to be, and really develop a relationship so they can feel that. That's, some people may call it part of my, selling aspect, but it's not really. I'm informing them, and they get a comfort zone to know that they're not going to get, you're not dealing with a manager or catering manager or something. They're dealing with me. It's my business, and I want them to be informed as much as possible. People on my staff will tell them to say, we don't cut corners. We charge this because of that, and I always tell them, professional service and qualities of food has value. Anybody can do it for less. It's the ones that what you want to do is get the best value for your money. And that's what I try to, whether it's us or anybody else, that's what I tell my clients to really strive and look for.
Right.
And when they're looking for a caterer for for their special day. Then ask the right. If they inform them, you know, they make better decisions.
Are you a self-taught cook, at least for the most part?
Yes, I have. But I've worked with a lot of chefs over my, you know, my lifetime. But for majority of it, I'm very self-taught.
You know, and that's kind of fun, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, because I recognize and do things. I can see recipes, see foods, taste foods, and, you know, I can put a twist to it. I can put my own nuances in it. And I just use, my ethnic background, and I kind of, it's part of my life, that's part of my culture, and I kind of put a little in it. I never really did it consciously, but I could see it after I review it. It has my thumbprint on it, let's put it that way.
That's a good feeling, too. Chef David Perez is going to help kick off this Saturday's big event at Kenosha's Lakefront, the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival. Things will kick off with Chef Mary Radigan and with Chef David. Explain to our listeners what you're going to be doing to help celebrate this New Orleans theme that is part of this year's event.
Well, when we were talking to Artist Mahone, and we were coming to think of something that's a menu item that we're looking for, and the first thing that came to my mind was, it was a couple things. But it was a pork belly skewer. And I can just kind of, I've been developing that recipe over this past year to other clients that I have. And I think with a little twist, I made a different barbecue sauce, like a Bourbon Street barbecue sauce that really would kind of fit this theme of what they were looking for a New Orleans type of cuisine. And with what Mary is making, I think it's a good combination of the two that'll fit well together.
Excellent. By the way, what's meant by pork belly? Is it as literal as it sounds?
It's bacon. It's pork belly. It comes from the underbelly of the pig, and it's actually before it's cured and smoked. It's then it's called bacon. Here it's in its rawest form.
Okay, so this is in a sense like pre-bacon.
Yeah,
meat that could be prepared as bacon, but you prepare it in another way.
Right. We still cure it, we marinate it, and we grill it at the end. I have you'll see the whole demonstration at the Jazz Festival, and it's not really that difficult. It's something that can really be prepared. What I like about it can be prepared ahead of time. You can freeze it. You can use it a couple days later. And then serve for your clients. Just all you have to do is finish it, and it's a great appetizer.
Fantastic. And this is, you're going to demonstrate something that even a mere mortal could prepare?
I would hope so, depending on the mortal.
Right. Very good. David Perez, otherwise known as Chef David of Chef David's Catered Events, I am so glad to meet you after all these years. And I know a lot of people are so excited about the culinary aspect of this fantastic event coming up this Saturday, the Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival. And we want to remind people that it starts with the food at 1:15, and that's when you can see Chef David in person and in action. David Perez, thank you so much for making time in your busy schedule to be part of the morning show today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And at 8:58, we have just enough time to give you a little taste of the headliner, Huge Groove, who will be playing 7:30 Saturday evening at Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues. Harbor Park Jazz Rhythm and Blues this Saturday beginning at 1:15 and lasting well into the evening. Huge Groove, the culminating headlining act for this year's festival. My thanks to Tim Mahone for joining me today on The Morning Show, and to my other guests yesterday and today, Mary Radigan, Chef David, and the lead singer to Natty Nation. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, I'll speak with the author of a brand new book about one of the most critical turning points in the Second World War, the Battle